This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
So as we think of classroom leadership and as we think of setting the tone, we're thinking of what we're going to do here in these first weeks. I'd like to ask a bit of a survey. How many of you are entering the classroom full-time? Not teacher's aide or anything like that, entering as a classroom teacher for the first time this year. Raise your hand. Okay, quite a few of you. Now, let me say something directly to you first. I think it's very imperative that you don't just teach 1 year. 1 year is not enough. Make it at least two or more as you go into teaching. So if you go in with that mindset, I hope that will help you. How many of you are two or more years? The rest of you, I guess. Welcome. I think we can learn some things from each other. To those first-year teachers, take heart. 32 years ago, I sat not in this place, but I was in your shoes, and probably trembling just as badly as maybe you might be today. But you'll get over it, and you'll survive. And so don't worry about that. When Jonas Sauter contacted me about doing a few sessions, he sent me this blurb, and I'll just go over that briefly here. He said, setting the tone through managing yourself, and we're probably going to spend at least half of our time here talking about you and me and how we manage ourselves. We're going to talk about proper appearance in dress and attitude. We're going to talk about instilling the desire to work and learn through example and encouragement. Now, that was the committee's words, not mine, and I'll try to fill that out, to fill the intent of the committee. Now, a few of us are original, and so I borrowed a number of things from other resources, and I'll just give credit to them. The first one I give credit to is the COE Classroom Manual. Now, some of you, as I look across your faces, were in my classes a few weeks ago. And so there's going to be some repeats. But the way we worked you there and how hard we worked you, I doubt if you got it all. And they say if you throw pie at someone's face often enough, eventually they'll lick a little bit and ingest it. So I'm going to throw some more pie in your face today. This manual is available from COE for $30 if any of you are interested. Secondly, and you'll probably hear about this one often this week, and that is Harry Wong's book on the first day of school. I'm showing here two different editions. Either one will work. The one on the left there is the less expensive one because it's an older edition and more readily available. These are quite expensive, but I would recommend you try Amazon or eBay or something like that. Sometimes, right now, though, they're up because school's starting. I usually check throughout the year and build up a supply, and often you can get them for a penny or two plus $3.99 shipping, so they're not expensive, so I would recommend that one. And then an old standby, the Handbook for Creative Teaching, written by David Martin. All three of these sources are books that I don't expect you to sit down and read from cover to cover before you enter the classroom. But all of them are indexed well enough that I want you to go to them for problem areas, for ideas, as you go through the year. Excellent resources. By all means, use them. Check with your school to see if they have one. I think school boards should make sure that there's a reference copy in each of your libraries so that you can have these books for when you need them. To start us off here, I'm going to read one excerpt from Harry Wong, and it's entitled The Noble Teacher. And I have a reason for doing this. I want us to recognize that as teachers, we have a high calling, and we don't need to hide behind being a teacher. And if I may use a word that's easily misunderstood, I think you can be proud to be a teacher. Is that okay? In other words, be happy, be content in what God has called you into. As I read, As we begin each new school year, let us remember the fine nuances and the distinguishing essence of that proud word, teacher. Let us be reminded of the tools at your command because of your talents, your traits, and your training, and because you chose to become a teacher. Teacher, you are a poet. As you weave with your colorful magic language a passion for your subject, you create a vast and grand mosaic of curiosities to imagine, secrets to unfold, connections only to begin the cycle of learning. Teacher, you are a physicist. As you bring magic, logic, reason, and wonder to the properties, changes, and interactions of our universe. Teacher, you are a maestro, a master of composing as you conduct and orchestrate individuals' thoughts and actions from discordant cacophony into harmonic resonance. Teacher, you are an architect. As you provide each student a solid foundation, but always with a vision of the magnificent structure that is about to emerge. Teacher, you are a gymnast. As you encourage the contortions and gyrations of thoughts and the flexing and strengthening of ideas. Teacher, you are a diplomat and the ambassador of tact and sensitivity as you facilitate productive, positive interactions among the multiplicity of personalities and cultures, beliefs, and ideals. Teacher, you are a philosopher. As your actions and ethics convey meaning and hope to young people who look to you for guidance and example. So, as you prepare for your first day and each day, when your students enter and you encounter their attitudes ranging from eager, enthusiastic anticipation to uncomfortable, uncertain apathy, recall the powers you have within you, from poet to philosopher, and present yourself to those students as a person worthy of noble title, teacher. Now, I recognize that's written entirely, most likely, from a secular standpoint. But there's so much there that you and I can apply to our work together as teachers. Just a note on the overheads. This session is not highly mechanical. It's, I hope, more inspirational. You probably won't have time to copy everything down, but I just put up some things, and there's a place in your book for notes if you want to do that. So, setting the tone. How do we set the tone? We're going to look at four parts here. I mentioned these earlier. Managing yourself. And each of these will come up again. Roman numeral two, being professional in attitude and dress. Number three, being an example in instilling a desire to learn. And number four, being an example in encouragement. I'd like to begin with a story. A number of years ago, in conversation with a very experienced teacher, he told me this story, and I'll share it with you the best that I can. He said there was another young, inexperienced teacher, maybe just like one of you. Maybe had 1 year in the class, maybe 2 years in the class. And he was at the end of his rope. He said, I'm giving up. Teaching's not for me. He was discouraged. He didn't want to go on teaching. And he used an expression that all of us have heard time and again. He said, I'm burned out. So he came to this experienced teacher with the question, what should I do? And the answer may surprise us, and I'll try to illustrate. All of us have at times tried to start fires. Fires to give heat, roast some hot dogs, burn some rubbish in the garden, etc. And I even toyed with the idea of having a table here and demonstrating, but I didn't think the fire marshal would like that too well. So I have to improvise. We all know that when you start a fire, you don't just take a fire log and a match and hold the match up to the log and expect it to burn. That doesn't work too well. And so we begin with kindling. We gather together some twigs, some dry grass, some paper. And then we put a match to that. And we get the log burning until it's burning very deeply. And just a self-sustaining fire as long as there's wood there to burn. Now, the answer that this experienced teacher gave the young man was something like this. He said, "Son, you're not burned out." He said, "All you have is kindling." And you know that when you start a fire with kindling, it burns up quickly. And if you don't put bigger logs on the fire, it'll burn out. So I ask us this morning, do you have a fire? Or are you just working with kindling? So I would like all of us to get that deep fire burning within. And when it's burning within, it will continue to sustain us. Kindling just burns quickly and it's gone. We need a lot more than kindling. As we read in Proverbs 26:20, it says, "Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out." I'm going to talk here about managing our attitude and outlook, because we're looking at who we are and how we present ourselves to our classes. Managing ourselves by our attitude and by our outlook. That's very important that we have the proper outlook. You know, we teach much, much more by who we are than what we know. So have a positive spirit. Rejoice in the Lord. Depend on His strength to handle the strength, the burdens, and the responsibilities. Be realistic. You know, we have our limits. We are human. So we have to be realistic about what we can and cannot do concerning schedules, concerning opportunities, concerning what we can do. And then find a mentor. Find someone who can caringly and honestly speak into your life. Be accountable to someone. Because teaching can be stressful. It can get you down. It can wear you out. So find someone that you can be accountable to. Which means we need to avoid burnout. Burnout can be a problem for busy teachers because there's no end to what we can be doing. No end whatsoever. And as you put yourselves into the lives of your students, do it diligently. Do it heartily as unto the Lord. Here's a few pointers for avoiding burnout. Get enough rest, fresh air, exercise, and diversion. I had a group of teachers one year when I was on, principal at Fairhaven in Gap. We probably had a staff of 8 to 10 that year. And I had some young, energetic teachers and staff. And many times after school, after the students had gone, they would go out either on the basketball court or on the soccer field, and they would just kick that ball and run from one end to the other for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and they come back in. One area where we as teachers tend to waste a lot of time is that time when the students go home and the load is there waiting for checking. Well, I found these teachers, by having a diversion and getting some physical exercise, getting out there and doing it, it rejuvenated them. And then they could come back in and they could go over their work and they could get their work done in that way. So find a diversion. Moderation and temperance. Keep your life balanced. Positive stress reliever. I may have mentioned that already. Have a hobby or a personal interest. And the bottom one there is probably the one that rubbed me the most, is unpleasant assignments. You know, there are always those things in checking at the end of the day that are easier to do. Tests weren't hard to correct. You know, multiple choice, true and false, you could do those pretty easily. But compositions and reports, I hated to do them. And guess what? My file where they handed them in kept stacking up because I kept putting it off and putting it off. Find some way in doing those unpleasant things in a timely manner. Because teachers, we are very, very precise with our due dates on when assignments are due. We want them to hand those things in to us on time. Am I going to be as prompt and as diligent in returning it to them as I want them to be in turning them in to me? And so don't push off those unpleasant things. They don't tend to go away. They'll be there haunting you, staring you in the face tomorrow morning when you come back. Let's look now at your calling to teach. I trust you know that this is an important call because it's a call from God. This is not just another job. You get that? It's not just another job. If you're in it for a job, and I don't see many board members here, I'm going to tell you, you better go back and resign. Pronto. Don't go through the year if you're only doing it for a job. And I don't think any of you are here for that. But that's how strongly I feel about that. Don't do it if it's only a job. God calls us to serve by teaching. That's a specific call. It's a call for you. Now, some of you may have had calls from different schools in prior years, etc. And you may have said no. And that's okay. Each time and each place are different. But it is a very specific call. God calls committed people. I believe you are here because you are committed to teaching. And God knows you. That's why he called you. Committed to teach, committed to continuing throughout the year in whatever God wants you to continue to do. It's a call that should be taken seriously, and I'm sure that you do, or else you wouldn't be here. I didn't see anyone tied up and drug in by rope, but maybe you were coerced, manipulated in some way or other. But I believe you're here because you want to learn. You are here because you're taking your calling seriously, because it is a very serious call. Now, why is it such a serious call? First of all, Satan doesn't like Christian school teachers. He has you in his sights. And if you look in James chapter 3, and I'll just paraphrase it because I don't have a translation here. The King James doesn't make it quite as clear, but I'll paraphrase it like this. It says, not many of you should want to be teachers. But then he goes on and says, because you will be judged to a higher standard. Now, why is that? Because by the same token that you have a lot of opportunities to influence students to the Lord, we can also turn them away. I don't want to scare you, but it is a serious calling. God has placed you there for a particular reason, for a particular time and place. It's a call that brings conviction. As you go through the year, I believe the weight of it, the conviction of it, is going to grow on you, and I believe it should. We need to see the importance of the work. But not only will you see that in and of yourself you are inadequate. If you haven't discovered that yet, you soon will. You cannot do it by yourself. And so you must rely on God, on a higher power, because his enablement and his presence is what is necessary for this to go on. You need to be wholeheartedly yielded to that call. We do a lot of this through our prayer life. Make prayer a priority. Jesus took numerous times recorded and probably more numerous times not recorded where he went apart into a mountain to pray, sometimes all night. Prayer does not just happen. Prayer needs to be set aside. You need to make a time for it. Make it a priority. Schedule times to pray. Don't just squeeze it in, although you'll do a lot of squeezing, I'll guarantee, as you go through the day. You'll be squeezing off a lot of prayers, but start the day with more than just squeeze prayers. Seek a daily cleansing. Prayer and our devotional life is about our relationship with God. And there's probably nothing where you are faced so constantly with pressures like teaching. Pressures that may be somewhat outside of your control, and you need that daily cleansing. If there's sin or iniquity in your life, it will be a block between you and your students. There's a lot of things occupational-wise that we can do and not be cleansed and pure, but I don't know that we can teach very long without that being a direct hindrance. Pray for your students. Most of your prayer is going to be in private for your students, but they should also hear you pray aloud for them at times. Now, I'm not suggesting that you get into the habit of every morning in your devotional time say all their names, but I am suggesting that before you get to that time, whether in the classroom or in your closet, that you do pray for your students by name, individually. Susie is having so much trouble with her spelling, and Johnny just needs help with his math. Different things that you're going to be facing that day. Pray for your students. Let's follow Paul's example in Philippians 1, where he said, I thank my God upon every remembrance in every prayer. Let me start over. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you, teachers and students, begun a good work in you, will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ, even as it is meet for me to think this of you all, because I have you in my heart. For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ. Pray all the time in an attitude of prayer. As you teach, as you walk around the class, as you answer questions, breathe a prayer. And especially when things get frustrating, and they will, breathe a prayer. Be in submission to God in prayer. Submitting to God takes more than just saying, thy will be done. It requires total obedience. Obedience to the known will of God in all that we do or say. There may even be situations where you will spend time fasting and praying. I could tell you lots of stories in the last years of some of the trying students that I had. Never give up on a student. We tend to do that. We tend to give up. But let's never give up. Let's keep right on in that. Let's go next to managing our time. Time is something that you'll never have enough of as a teacher. This is not a 5-day-a-week, 8-to-5 job, in case you haven't learned that yet. There's a lot of work necessary to have a well-managed classroom. A lot of scheduling, a lot of work. Consider these pointers. Find out what is important and then allocate time for that. Find out what is most important and set aside time for that. In my days in the classroom, I was a list maker. I would take a piece of paper, an 8.5 by 11, I would fold it in half, and then I would fold it 3 more times, and I carried it in my shirt pocket all the time. So I had that, there's just an endless amount of surfaces on a piece of paper like that. I carried it with me. I jotted things down. I crossed them off. Set things in order of importance. Have priorities and follow them. Evenings and especially weekends, I would go home, and Saturdays were never long enough. Saturdays were never long enough for the list of things that I wanted to do. There are certain things through the week that you keep pushing off. I'll do it on Saturday. Well, Saturdays are not long enough, so you need to watch that as well. Use your free time creatively and profitably. You will have some free time. Use it creatively and profitably. Sometimes you can double task or multitask. Your trips, don't just run to the store or to town for one or two things. That's where your list comes in handy. Write it down. Can it wait until Saturday, or do I have to go to the store tonight? Do I have to make that trip to Walmart tonight? Plan and keep a schedule. Keep a notebook to record information, reminders. Have a planner on your desk or a big calendar, some way of keeping track of things. Now, I'm going to grant it to you as young people, you have a much better memory than what I do at this point in life. So maybe you think you don't need to write things down. But trust me, you're going to forget things if you don't have some way of being organized, keeping a notebook, keeping things there. Now, especially to you as young people, and most of you are very young here, allow yourself some leisure time in moderation. Allow yourself leisure time in moderation. You need it. You'll need a lot of preparation time in your first year of teaching. Or if you've accepted a different school, or your school has changed to a different curriculum, it's going to take extra time. And you're going to have to do that. With experience, things will get easier, especially if you keep teaching in the same place with the same curriculum. Each year, you can gain a little bit more. Let me mention this. If you have 5 subjects to teach this year with 2 or 3 grades, you cannot thoroughly teach every subject. I would recommend you choose one subject. This year, I'm going to do my science very thoroughly. Long lesson plans, outlines, all the bells and whistles, etc. Or maybe you're going to do math, or maybe you're going to do history, or maybe you're going to do English. Do a real bang-up job on one subject this year. Do another subject next year when you'll have the notes of this year's. You see where I'm going? You cannot do that with the amount of time that you have in every subject for every grade level. Now, I would recommend, and this is going to be counterintuitive, I'm going to recommend that you do it with a subject that you like the least, not your favorite subject. You can probably wing it a lot easier in your favorite subject than you can in some of the others. Manage priorities, and I won't say much about that, other than to say, guard against overextensions. Guard your health. And you may even be asked to teach Sunday school. And that's okay if you can handle it. But I would say for you first grade teachers, if you are currently a Sunday school teacher, there's nothing wrong with asking to be relieved of that. See if you can lessen responsibilities in other areas to give you more time that you can put into your teaching in these first few years, and it will go a long way. Let's go now to being professional. We as Anabaptists tend to shy away from that word professional, and maybe with a good reason. Somehow, though, we seem to have equated the word professional with the word pride, and therefore we stray away from it. Allow me to review school teachers in the last 33 years. And I'm so thrilled to see the number of young men here today. I never saw one man in any of my classrooms until I got into 10th grade. Now, I realize we put the men usually in upper grade classrooms, but I have a few close friends who have taught first grade. And that's very, three actually that I know that have taught first grade. That's somewhat unusual, and yet nothing wrong with it. So I'm saying that when I started teaching, for a man to teach school was not very highly esteemed. And I hope it's going better for you than it did for me. Back then it was okay if you were physically handicapped, had some heart condition or something, and you couldn't work a real job or something like that. Sometimes I'd hear comments, you know, when are you going to get a real job? You know, teaching for a man was seen as something that you did for a year or two, and then you had your term put in, and you went and you got a real job. Well, I'd like to say this morning that you have entered a very real job. Don't let anyone underestimate your real job. And I say that to go on then and say you are a professional. And let's treat teaching in that way. What is your attitude toward teaching? Do you see it as something that you are doing professionally? And you will go a long ways in that. We also need to be professional in dress. And I don't know what your school policy is. I think I'm safe here in making some rather strong statements. First of all, I would like to say, make sure that you are, first of all, within the dress standards of your home church, if you're not teaching at home, and the community in which you go into. You know, sometimes there are differences. So, especially if you're going into another community, make sure that you know what is expected of you so that you're not an offense. And particularly that you're not leading the children in a direction that their parents don't want them to go. That may call for some sacrifice on your part. It may call for you to give up something that you're used to doing at home for the sake of the community in which you're teaching. Secondly, speaking to the men here, if I come to visit your school, I hope you're not in blue jeans and sneakers. Now, maybe that's okay where you are. I'll be frank, it's not okay with me, and I'm not your authority, so that's okay. But I think we need to dress the part. As a professional teacher, I think we need to dress the part. I won't say more on that. Let's go on. There is an article here that I had hoped to read, and maybe I'll just skim a little bit. And this is Secular, Clothing and Appearance in the Workplace by Shelley Frost. She wrote, "Dress at the office affects the overall impression and environment. In some cases, the clothing employees wear affects productivity. The type of business and preferences of the management team play a role in the type of acceptable clothing in the workplace and often lead to dress codes. The style of clothing is only one component of appearance. Without proper grooming and care of both body and clothing, even a suit looks bad. Regardless of the type of dress, clothing should look neat, clean, and full, free of wrinkles." Now, I'm sure some of you are thinking, but I'm going to go out and I'm going to roughhouse it at recess. How long does it take you to slip out of your dress shoes into a pair of sneakers? Not that long, does it? So do dress the part. I'll leave it and you can go on from there. Number three, being an example in instilling the desire to learn. We need to inspire our students. What's the difference between a good teacher and an excellent teacher? Well, a good teacher knows his material. A good teacher can ably teach information and uses a variety of methods to present and practice and test information. An excellent teacher does all that and more. An excellent teacher is like the icing on the cake. The cake is good without icing, but we like icing, don't we? So let's see how we can put the icing on the cake and become excellent teachers. So an excellent teacher inspires. He heightens student curiosity, interest, and enthusiasm. He's able to light fires that keep on burning and not just a puff of fire with some kindling. An excellent teacher has passion. Do you have a passion for your calling? It'll show. Passion. Passion lights the fire of your students. A teacher with passion has zeal, has joy, has a positive meaning, and he loves what he's doing. An excellent teacher influences people, changes lives for the better, stirs in students a desire to be like him. So how is all that done? First of all, be yourself. You know, we can make the mistake, and we can learn a lot from others, but we can make the mistake by trying to copy other people, trying to copy their styles. I made the mistake when I was first ordained trying to copy another preacher. And I'm sure the congregation saw what I was doing, and it fell flat. It wasn't me. It's a little like Saul and David. When David wanted to go out against Goliath, Saul put on his big, heavy armor on David, and David said, "It's not going to work. It's not me." So do be yourself, but then pick up tips from other teachers and use them, apply them. But use your own style. You need to grow. Read widely. Learn as much as you can. Go to teacher meetings. Go to summer school, etc. Be enthused. I don't know how many of you would be asleep if up to now I would just be standing up here and I would say, look, you got to be enthused. You got to be interested. You have to just make it interesting for your student. I can hardly talk in a monotone, but you see what I'm saying. You have to be excited. You have to be enthused if you want to excite your students. Here's the one that is going to hit you the hardest. They say to sell real estate, there's three important things: location, location, location. I'm going to borrow that phrase and say for a teacher to inspire, it's preparation, preparation, preparation. And you're never going to get finished. Preparation, preparation, preparation. Especially you first-year teachers. First year or two, when I was teaching, I was a father, had a family, and I would go home with a briefcase full of preparation. I didn't stay late at school because I wanted to be home with the family. So oftentimes it was after they went to bed that I would get out my books on the dining room table and work at preparation. Confidence. Teach with authority. Commanding, not demanding, attention and respect. Learn to know your students. Know their likes and dislikes. Know their hobbies. If you have a family that maybe has bees or some unusual thing, get them to come and tell you about it. Take a day off. My high school music teacher was from upstate New York. And every probably February or March, we would put all music aside. And for a week or two, we would talk about tapping trees and making maple syrup, because that's what his family did in upstate New York. It was an icebreaker for us there in the dead of winter, and we just put all our music aside, and we looked at maple syrup and maple sugar. Get involved in some of the things that they're doing outside of class. Create a desire to learn. Getting ahead of myself here. Create a desire to learn. Show them the value of the information that you're presenting, and above all else, care. You have to care for who they are, what they're doing, what you expect of them. You have to show them that you care. In the final moments yet here, let's look at encouragement. I'd like to suggest to you this morning that you be an encourager, not a parasite. A parasite saps the strength and energy out of co-workers, co-teachers, even out of the students in the classroom. Be an encourager, not a parasite. How do we do some of this? First of all, build a confidence in the students. Help to build them up. Words of encouragement, a little bit here, a little bit there. Build up confidence. Let them know that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. And not is it only is it okay for you for them to make mistakes, but it's okay for you to make mistakes. I just came over out of Brother Melvin Lehman's session, and I'll repeat one thing that he said. Some of you already heard it. He said, if students know that you love them, they will forgive you for anything. But if they're not sure if you love them, they'll nail you to the wall on your first mistake. So love your students, and they'll give you a lot of room. The only people who never make mistakes are the people who never did anything or never do anything. So it's okay. Mistakes equal effort. It shows that something is being done, something is being tried, something is being worked out. So be open and honest about your own mistakes. Be transparent. They know you're human. They'll see right through your bluffs. So don't try to hide behind a false front. Focus on their past successes. You've done well, not on their failures. And recognize their achievements. Just a few words in closing. Remember that in setting the tone, you have only one opportunity to make the first impression. That first day, you only do it once. And as a word of encouragement to your first year teachers, you'll never have to do this again. You'll never again be a first year teacher. So go into it with confidence, with enthusiasm, and God will bless you. For tomorrow, this brief preview, I've been asked to talk about establishing and maintaining order. You don't need to copy this. It'll show up again tomorrow. Steps to effective discipline, proper student-teacher distance in relationships, and then looking at remedial discipline. God bless you. Thank you for coming, and I'll turn the time over to the moderator.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.